Okay, thank you very much, everyone, for joining us today. Very happy to introduce the very esteemed panel of the day. First, we have Mr. Pittas from Euroseas. Then we have John Wovenschmidt from Genco. And then Mats from Pacific Basin. And Mr. Poulis from SafeWalkers. After that, we have Stamatis from Synergy, Hamish, and then finally Robert joining here in the end. Before we kind of dive into the dry bulk market, I'm actually happy to remind everyone that today, March 20th, is the International Day of Happiness, and according to the United Nations. I must say it's for the first time in quite a few years, I feel genuinely happy to moderate this this panel. It's been a tough period. But before we kind of dive into how the world looks today, I think it would be interesting to ask the panel, over the last couple of years, what's the most important lesson learned in kind of navigating through the volatile behavior of the dry bulk industry? I'm not sure if anyone would like to go first.
Well,
I can start.
Hamish?
I think the most important lesson that we've learned is to keep operating costs, overheads, and financing costs as low as possible and low enough to get through a prolonged downturn. Mm. You know, revenues are going to be revenues, but focusing on costs is probably the most important thing in dry bulk.
Clint,
please.
I think the most important thing is not to get overexcited when things start looking good. I think that was the mistake that happened in 07, 08 when it was fantastic, but it was the same mistake that happened in 14, 15 when times were starting to look good. And we all went out and ordered new ships, believing that the market would go back to levels that we had seen in 07, 08. These are not to be seen again for the foreseeable, you know, many years.
Mats, any additions, or John?
Well, I was going to say, you know, the I think the biggest thing that we didn't quite comprehend going into this was the length and the severity of the downturn. And I think as Hamish started, the you know, keeping operating expenses and expenses low is very important, but it's really preparing yourself as you see the downturn coming. And if you have an opportunity to raise equity, take that opportunity. Don't wait until you're until we're running below cash flow break-even numbers. I think that's one of the most important things that that a lot of us learned in going through this, and set your balance sheet up where, you know, it's not 12 months, it's not probably not 2 years, it's probably more like 3 years of runway that you need to have in place.
That was really driven by by owners and expectations. The upturn was not driven by cargo. The shippers was not driving. They were not prepared to pay. But owners were very willing to order an enormous number of ships on speculation. So this time, I hope we have learned that let cargo, let the shippers drive an upturn, and let's not destroy the upturn before it starts by over-ordering. So secondhand is still a good idea. There's a lot of ships out there, and there's still surplus capacity in the fleet by way of speed. Everybody forgot speed the last time.
Yes, I think the lesson learned is that cycles can be longer than what we expect, because there are many things that change every time in the model. Ship owners, we forgot completely the basic in the last round. We forgot that 2010, 11, and 12 we had the largest inflow of new buildings in the market. And despite that numbers, the order book reached 80% of the fleet at the time. Despite that influx of new buildings, in 2013 we had a good market and we all rushed to add eco ships in the equation. I mean, we should stick to the basics and preserve liquidity because cycles are longer than they used to be.
Robert, any final comment on the first question?
I don't think the operating costs really matter that much in these things because the swings are just so violent. You know, and you know, saving $400,000-$500,000 a day on your OPEX is nothing if your asset's going down $20 million in 3 or 4 months. I think it's about maintain doing whatever you can to create liquidity, maintain liquidity on the way down, and whether that's in the company, whether that's PA, whether that's in subdivisions, so that, you know, what really matters is whether you can take advantage of that steep crisis and be there at the bottom or a point like this to reinvest on the way up. Because our industry will be, you know, I don't think it's going to change. I think we'll have these steep, steep swings where the industry attracts capital over time, more and more capital, more and more momentum, and ultimately there's a demand crash somewhere in the world economy, and you get a drive downwards hard, you get the self-recorrecting, and then, you know, the virtuous side, like what's happening now as economic growth, what I agree with Matt's, as real cargo and demand comes in, takes it up. And the only thing to learn is maintaining the liquidity.
Stamatis, any additions to that?
Yeah, well, actually, one of the most important lessons that you know, we learn, especially here in New York, is that when you hear that a certain sector is finished and everybody's using the word finished, this is the right time to buy. Back in 2012, everybody was saying that you know, the crude market was finished, the Suezmax were obsolete, the VLCCs, and the world's going to be full of pipelines. And, you know, after that, we had three of the best years in, you know, the crude market in history. Last year, same time last year, the analysts and everybody, all the experts here in New York, they were saying that the crude market is finished. And now we see some very strong signs of recovery. And I think that, especially the Capesizes that we operate, will have at least 2 to 3 years of very strong rates in the coming years. So, you know, when you hear the word finished here, it's actually the right time to invest.
I don't disagree with Robert's point that liquidity is very important, but I do want to point out that a perpetuity of $1,000 a day at a 10% cost of capital is $3.6 million per vessel. So, I mean, that's pretty important.
So a former CEO of a tanker company that was restructured once told me that our ability to look into the future is very static. You know, looking into the future now, I'm not sure if we kind of have a dynamic view of the future, but what part of the, call it the predictions about the future, can we be quite comfortable on? What do you think is the most important, call it, or what are you least worried about when you look at the next coming years in dry bulk?
You're always worried when you're in dry bulk. We are at a stage which is approaching the average, and from the average things can move up and down. I'm really worried about how China will react and how China's policy will affect our industry, because it continues to affect it the most. And it really depends on decisions that the Chinese government will take for its own purposes in the next couple of years. Last year, they shut down coal mines for some days a year. Then they changed their mind when the price went up. And all these things influence our market tremendously and will continue to influence our markets tremendously. So I am worried about how that policy is going to be and how we can structure a strategy irrespective of these changes. So now I'm not worried because prices are not too elevated, because rates are not too high, because we're not in this exuberance. I'm worried because I get the feel that people think that the market will actually improve significantly from where it is. It's approaching a decent level in my mind, and you know, we'd be happy if it approaches that and stays there for some time.
I asked you about what you're most comfortable about, but you tell me about your worries. I guess that's a sign that
I'm comfortable that operating expenses will be relatively low. We won't see a cost increase in operating expenses. We may see further value increases in vessels, so cost increase in buying a ship.
Mm. John?
I don't think you can take anything for granted right now. Sorry, I know that's not answering the question, but I mean, the biggest fear probably of this entire panel is that that you have capital inflow into this industry in the form of new buildings, and we're now, I know this is a little probably later in the agenda, but we're getting to a point where, you know, resale values are getting close to new building parity, and I think that's always been the biggest risk for this industry. I mean, the only cycle I think that the industry has ever had a demand shock was the Asian flu, and that was short lived. Every single time that we have a down cycle, it is because of overordering. So that is something that we certainly worry about significantly. Again, capital coming in and ruining the party, so to speak. The one interesting thing, though, and I am a little off topic, but I do hope that at least that from the private equity side, that one of the lessons that's been learned is it's not so hard to put money to work in this industry, but it can be very difficult to exit, which I think a lot of the private equity firms have realized over the last few years. So I'm somewhat optimistic that hopefully that lesson has been learned, at least for the short to medium term. That will be forgotten again as well. But that keeps a lid somewhat on the new building ordering.
Yeah, and in case there are any investors in the audience who are not aware of this, every institutional investor who backed a speculative dry bulk new building program got fired. So keep that in mind.
That's an important warning shot there, Hamish.
I think we can be confident that the industry nor the investors will learn anything at all from the past. Okay, that I think we can be really confident about. So it means that, as we're seeing already, all of us, all of the people on this table, if we look ourselves in the mirror, would not really have expected the real strength in the demand, underlying demand growth in what we're shipping that we've had in the last 6 or 9 months. I think that all of us would think that the market is working much better than we had originally thought. And I think that every other shipping cycle in any other position, and the same for you analysts, the same for big, broad economists, have understated the real physical demand growth that's happening. And I think where Matt started off with, you know, these markets are driven by that demand. So that, I think, I'm comfortable that people will understate that, so therefore the market can continue to go higher. It's not really, if we look at dry cargo still compared to other markets, we've only gone from really awful to kind of bad. I mean, we're still not at the level where we're returning a whole bunch of profitability at the moment. But the estimates on our cargo carried keeps going up and up and up. So I think we won't learn. The markets will go up. The capital will come in. And, you know, then the great thing for people buying now or holding now will get that double benefit of not just improved cash flows in the companies, but an improved valuation as the dry cargo companies do what they did in the past, which is capital suddenly just drives valuations above the NAVs significantly. Mm. And so I'm very comfortable that Wall Street has no memory, that no lessons will be learnt, and we're just off to another great cycle in shipping.
Mm. I think that's
One of the biggest risks that the industry is facing right now is the so-called shadow order book. And I agree with John that the new building orders have always been the biggest risk and the biggest threat in shipping. But we have recently experienced that a number of the Chinese shipyards in particular, they have been deciding to start rebuilding ships that were abandoned. So we might see, especially in the Ultramax and the smaller sizes, we will see new ships hitting the water in 17 and early 18. All those ships that were abandoned and potentially deleted from all the lists that we know of, they have decided to build them and deliver them, and they are going to hit the waters end of 17 and beginning of 18. So that's the shadow order book that nobody knows of, and you know, it's going to be back into play very, very soon. And that's an order book that, you know, doesn't belong to any Western ship owner. They belong to the yards. The leasing firms are financing with the backing of the Chinese bank. So it's the Chinese bank financing the leasing company, and the leasing company is financing the yard to complete all this shadow order book, which is going to hit the water. And that's a big risk and a big threat that we should be aware of.
Okay. In sum to my question, I think you all will be good politicians, because none of you really answered the question. But I think the one thing that I guess Robert slightly alluded to it, was that the most visible thing you can be comfortable about today is the price. The price of a dry bulk ship today, even though it's come up, is still, in historical context, very, very low. Mats?
Well, you asked what we're comfortable with. I would say the grain demand looks pretty good. Coal, very political, very difficult to forecast. But grain demand is driven by urbanization and changed eating habits. They don't have enough land and water to grow their own crop in Asia, and grain demand looks very good. Mm. But I fully agree that too many ships are still coming, and we're having very little scrapping right now. And again, there's still surplus capacity by way of speed. So strong grain demand. Minor bulk in grain is almost 50% of dry bulk demand, and it's almost never spoken about. We only talk about iron ore and coal. But the smaller cargoes looks fairly solid.
Mm. So kind of let's continue a bit on the demand side, because in 15 we had the negative dry bulk demand for the first time since 1999. I don't think anyone saw that coming. Last year, Robert, you talked about the more, you know, nice demand recovery. We had 2.5% on our numbers, which in historical context is still not very, you know, nothing to jump very high for. Looking at this year, you mentioned positive outlook on grain. What other kind of key surprises do you think we can see this year? There's been some talk about coal from North Korea being banned into China. What's kind of your taking up most of your time on the demand side?
It's everything. It's my, every single cargo is functioning, okay? And, yeah, I get this idea of the supply, surplus supply, you know, worried about yards, stepping things forward. But let's look backwards this last 12, 14 months. There was, this time last year, there was an enormous amount of surplus supply. Ships were slow steaming, semi-layup, going to layup. We actually had supply growth last year, effectively, you know, disguised. I mean, you know, analysts kind of published these things of, oh, well, you know, 2% was scrapped, 4% was delivered. But the stuff that was scrapped was rubbish. Every ship coming in had much more supply per deadweight than what was going out. So somehow this market in 12, 13 months not only absorbed a tremendous amount of surplus supply in semi-layups, waiting, etc., like that, plus the supply it was given, yet the rate structure itself has improved significantly. The forward curve has improved significantly. Most importantly, customers across the board, it doesn't really matter whether they're grain, cement, iron ore, coal, are coming in, bidding this market in time charters, etc., that way. And we are very simply have understated the demand growth, and I really think the probability is very high that we continue to do that right now. Mm. And that demand, like in other cycles at this stage, will just blow through anything that's going to be thrown at the market from the supply side for the next 2 years. I mean, sure, you can get one or two, you can get a few orders, etc., but it's not like you can get a whole bunch of orders right now. I mean, you know, we're not in the market looking to order anything, but, I mean, guys, who orders in Japan here? When could you get a ship delivered in Japan right now?
Depends on the price. You can get one quickly.
If you pay up. But in a normalized position, when can you get one in Japan?
18, early 19.
So late 18, translated, that's late 18, early 19, and he probably only got a couple of births. So you cannot add much to this supply for the next 2 years, regardless of what you do.
China can add. If there is a boom, you will see China getting orders and delivering on these orders. So if there is a boom, and there are other difficulties for ordering, there is the...
So is that so terrifying? Our stocks double from here, triple from here, our asset prices go up 50% in a boom, then you get ordering? Yeah, I'll take that. No problem.
I think that's a very, very important point you're making, both you and Mats. It's because I get this question all the time, and it's really quite annoying question, because it sounds like the shipping industry is different from any other industry in the sense that capacity is not the function of price. To your point, I mean, obviously, there will be a rebound in this sector, there will be new orders, but the question is, what are the prices going to be? And that's, you know, that brings me on to the next question on asset values. You know, they've rallied quite hard, 50, 60, 70% over the last 12 months. Stocks are trading at significant premiums to NAV. Are you comfortable paying up with prices? How do you decide on what price to pay? Please.
Yes. Prices are all at some point a function of what a new building costs. So that's how one should start the analysis. What does a new building ship cost to build? And we've seen a lot of resales done at prices below the building cost, of course, because they were already built. But the building cost of ships, of Panamaxes, which we look at, you know, today is around $24 million. So I don't think that it is easy to see, again, second-hand prices go significantly higher than the depreciated value. So a $12 million 10-year-old Panamax today, which is approximately where the price is, sits well on the line, which says that prices of second-hand ships have rebounded quite significantly. They've been up 50-60%. And they are approaching where they should be. So I claim that we are at a level today where prices are approximately where they should be. That's how much a new building ship costs today, with no significant profit for the yard, and there will not be significant profits for yards. I'm not fearing that prices can go extremely high, because there's a lot of shipyards in hypnosis in China which can deliver dry bulk vessels of all sizes, maybe not so much on Capes, but still even there. So I think we're at a level where prices are reasonable, and I don't think we can see them increasing tremendously more over that level today. The 24 is lower than the historical average for various reasons, of course, mainly because we have too many yards right now and they are not making profits.
Yeah, so let's stick to that $12 million discussion. Let's hear what the rest of the panel thinks about.
Well, first of all, I'm not so sure if there is what the link is between secondhand values and new building values. New building values, there's a very high correlation on the price of steel. So that the price of steel and what happens there is going to drive yard new building prices. I do agree. I think where new building prices are today, these yards are still losing money, which is a very positive thing. But I do believe that as these freight rates increase, that you will see more uptick or a rise in secondhand values. It happens every single time. You can go back, whatever you want to go back, 20, 30, 40 years, and you can see a direct correlation between what you can do in the time charter market and actual prices of secondhand ships. And there are windows that open up where you can have anywhere from a 10% cash-on-cash return unlevered to 15, even 18% cash-on-cash unlevered. So I do believe that these prices have a further upward momentum to go here. It's certainly not going to be a straight line. It's not going to be linear. But as these as freight rates recover, vessel values will continue to move up.
Robert?
I really support John's Your previous cycles indicate anyway that the front of the curve will go, you know, you're going to get backwardization in the curve. You know, that's what happens in the last two cycles of dry cargo, that the shipping the water is worth more than ordering the ship at the front. The second thing I would take you to task on is you started by saying, you know, companies are trading above their net asset value. You can't upgrade your values fast enough. You came out 10 days ago with some silly little thing saying Clarkson's is allowing you to lift values of ships, and then you said all the NAVs have moved up.
Mm.
In the 10 days since, prices have gone up further. They're going to come to go up. Their deals being traded in the second-hand market right now. By the time we leave this room, the price will be up again further. So, so what?
I agree with you, and I it's frustrating to try to keep up with the rapidly increasing asset prices. I fully agree, but what you see throughout the cycle is obviously stocks trade at a premium when values are on the rise.
But Herman, can I just try to take this back to earnings, right? I mean, it's just the whole discussion is so wrong. Mm. This industry is so much about the value of the ships. It shouldn't be about the value of the ships. It should be making money on the ships. Mm. Which other industry are you talking about the value of the factories? Look at the ships as factories. You got to make money in the factories, not buy and sell the factories, right? Ships are supposed to make money. We're not even there yet, right? And the whole discussion is about NAV and second-hand values not going up enough. We've got to value this industry and these companies by companies, don't by ships.
But it's being driven also by, where you started, by real values.
Talking about the problem.
It's being driven by real value, by real earnings. Rio Tinto went in and took a cape at 17.5. And that that owner is making money off that position. Mm. Charter rates aren't moving up.
Yeah, and I think the values of second-hand ships are really cheap today. They shouldn't have gone so low they went in first quarter of last year. We all know what happened there. You know, you had a big drop of commodities, huge drop of oil prices. Stock markets in Asia panicking and closing down Shanghai Stock Exchange the first week of the year. It all hit at the same time, and prices went to levels that nobody believed would go. I think second-hand prices today are very low because they are not yet at the point they were in 2012, in the previous bottom of 20 years market, when we all rushed to buy second-hand ships because they were really very cheap. And today they are still lower than that level. Mm. And they are simply lower because the time charter of 1 year is $9,500 a day, and the break-even is 12. Mm. That's why I think it's they are very low. Now, regarding a factory and the comparison with the ship is not the same. I mean, Greek ship owners, over the years, they made most of their money by selling assets, not only keeping them. You made money trading the assets, buying and selling, not only by time chartering and making money from freight. The only exemption was in 2006 to 2008. But factories will never appreciate because sales of goods are going up or things like that. The asset appreciates, and the older Greek ship owners say, you have to take your profits when it's on offer.
So, Matis, are you keeping your good secrets on your own, or do you have anything to add?
Well, as you know, we probably bought two of the cheapest ships back in September, which we took delivery of in Q4 of last year. We paid 20.75 for ships that were initially ordered for 100 million. So we have probably the lowest acquisition cost among the dry bulk listed peers. And that means that even if the prices have moved up, let's say 30 or 40%, and instead of the low 20s, we see high 20s these days, we're still buyers. We still believe that the market has significant upside. And I agree with Robert that, by the time that this panel ends, we'll see values continue to go up, since we're still much, much lower than what the 25 or 30-year average price is.
Hamish?
Yeah, and over the longer term, we see good reason to be optimistic. I mean, if you think about what happened in 2014, certainly coal imports to China dropped, but maybe even a larger effect was that fuel prices dropped and the fleet sped up, thereby increasing the capacity of the dry bulk fleet rather suddenly. And the good news we see is that in 2020, which is well after this panel ends, but not that far in the future, January 1, 2020, all these ships are going to have to burn low sulfur fuel. That's going to cause the price of fuel more or less to double. And the fleet will slow down. And that's great, because when the fleet slows down, that means there are not enough ships.
Good. Let's. My last question I'm going to devote some time to, which I always think is interesting, and I'd like the entire panel to answer, and you have to actually give a name. Outside your own stock, which one would you buy of the names on the panel? And if someone dares, why?
Well, on the dry bulk side, you're talking about, right?
This is only dry bulk.
This is only dry bulk. I see. Let me have a look. Okay, if I had to buy a company here, I think I would buy Safe Bulkers, because it has a huge ownership of the sponsor who is running the business and who understands the business for many, many years and has been in it. And, yeah.
Okay. John? It's hard to compliment your competitors, huh?
Yeah, it has nothing to do with complimenting your competitors. I'm gonna dodge the question. I'm gonna go in a different direction, and that is this industry. And I think this industry needs consolidation. I think there are too many public companies out there in the dry bulk arena. You know, even today with recoveries and market caps moving up. I mean, these are still anywhere from $400 to $600 million market cap. I don't think they're necessarily investable from the Fidelities and the Janices of the world, which is ultimately what we want to get this industry back to. I would hope that this time around that consolidation is able to take place. I think it is maybe in a unique situation right now, is in that there are several public companies that have large financial sponsors, and as we've seen in other industries, as financial sponsors have come in during depressed times and as the market recovers, we've actually seen consolidation. Now, does consolidation mean that this industry is going to all of a sudden not be a price taker? Probably not, but it certainly could go a long way if we had a smaller group of public companies that shareholders could invest in, both driving down the cost of capital, but also, you know, just removing supply. So these things should trade better as they get bigger, and there's only a few of them out there. So that's my question, but I think it's important.
You know, when they open the door to the bedroom, you have to be open-minded. So yeah. You know, the panel. Anyone would like to merge with Genco or? I mean, why not, Mats? Why not merge with Genco?
I would buy an operator. You know, there's typically two classical business models. One is to be a tonnage provider and time charter out your ship to the end user who's got the cargo. The other business model is to be an operator. And I would look for operating companies because they have cargo. They have what you need. They have the customer relationships. They tend to outperform the time charter market. And again, I find too much focus on the asset values and too little focus on the earnings. Benchmark the earnings, benchmark the costs, and look for a company that outperforms and has what everybody needs, which is cargo.
John, I'm just letting you know that I will ask everyone why they're not merging with Genco unless you give me a name. So it's up to you. Do you want to have the rest of the panel be about?
Yes, I think the dry bulk companies with large fleets are there to appreciate in the long run. So somebody could say you can buy a stock and keep it for 2 or 3 years. You will make a lot of money, I believe. simply because, as I said before, we have not reached the previous low of 2012 on second-hand prices. So if you have a company that has 80 ships and assets appreciate $10 million in the next 2 years, it's $800 million of value to be shown on the stock. If you have 60 ships, it's $600 million. If you have 40 ships, it's $400 million. So companies like Star Bulk, Scorpio, all these people are still trading below $1 or around $2 basis the previous value. So they are really very, very, very cheap. So I believe if somebody wants to hold on those investments, they will make a lot of money in the next two to 3 years. You may not make a lot of money in the next 6 months. Over the 3 years, you will make a lot of money.
And your stock pick?
I said
Starbulk and Salt?
I said companies with big fleets.
Good.
Well, obviously, I agree with John that consolidation would help the industry. Obviously, Scorpio Bulkers has this sort of pristine, beautiful fleet with all new, and we hope that... we hope that Hamish is right in two things, that fuel oil prices go up, which will put our fleet in a great position, and that he maintains his low operating costs, because I calculate that he could buy us, we could split the difference on the savings, and we'd both make a couple of bucks a share on that.
Let's talk afterwards.
I would say we don't talk. If it, the roadmap, we don't talk, but we are willing to always listen. I actually think that if what we're talking about here, what is the best expression, what's the best stock for a dry cargo rally? Okay, it's none of us. The best stock, the best return you're going to get from this point on a dry bulk market rally is to buy Scorpio Tankers, okay? Because there will be no area in shipping that will benefit more from a rally and sustained rally in dry cargo as a result of broad economic world demand than product demand. And most importantly, there will be no company that will benefit more from all those medium to small shipyards getting filled up with dry bulkers than Scorpio Tankers. So that's my pick for a dry cargo rally, except for Scorpio Bulkers, is Scorpio Tankers.
Very well. That's a fair answer. I don't disagree that tankers look interesting for sure, but it's not this panel. We'll save that for later today. So not this?
Well, except for Synergy, which we believe is the most undervalued stock on this panel and the space. I would pick a company with the biggest concentration on the Capesizes that I'm confident will have the best performance in the next 3 to 4 years. And generally, I like companies that they have a big sponsor support, like Safe Bulkers, like a number of other companies that are not owned by hedge funds. And generally, big fleets, yeah, that's something that always good. So I would pick Safe, I would say.
Hamish?
And following in Robert's footsteps, my brother works for Google, and that would have been really good. But in the dry bulk business, I think if I had to pick a stock other than Star Bulk, I would pick Safe Bulkers. And the reason is that their costs are very similar to our costs. $1,000 a day, if you think our cost of capital is 10%, and you can figure out what you might think it is, that's $3,600,000 per vessel. If we earn $2,000 a day, or they earn $2,000 a day more than a peer because of lower costs or higher chartering performance, that's $7,200,000 a vessel more, and...
I got to take him down a bit here, okay? Because what he'll find is that what he'll find as he goes through things is it's about EBITDA. It's about what a ship creates at a given market in EBITDA, which is a function not just of costs, because it actually has to be working at the time, right? If you reduce your cost to zero, ships don't tend to work very well. And your headline rate, okay? There are many examples across industries that the cheapest cost doesn't result in the greatest EBITDA because you sacrifice at the revenue level.
Mm. Yeah. Although,
but I'm happy for him to take the cost differential out in an acquisition. That's absolutely great. Let's go.
And I think Safe Bulkers' revenues aren't too shabby.
No, they're not.
Revenues aren't too shabby.
But, you know, we are now at a time. I think everybody on this panel has done a tremendous amount, I know we have at Genco, on lowering our operating expenses over the last few years. And I don't necessarily disagree with Hamish, but now that we have all taken those steps, it is now time to look forward. It's time to look at how the company and what the company is going to do from a strategic standpoint in a rising market. Mm. That's the big picture right now. We have freight rates moving up. They're going to continue to move up. I believe that asset values are going to continue to move up. It's not about focusing on squeezing the last dollar out of the ship anymore. That time, fortunately, has come and gone, and I think we've all done a good job of that. It is now, what's the next move? Is it consolidation? Is it growing the fleet by raising equity and buying ships in the market? Those are the kinds of questions and thoughts that we should be thinking about.
Just before anything, I think that's a very important point.
The other thing, it's not about doing private equity pipes overnight discounted to your net asset value either.
Mm. I agree with that.
Can I say something here? And this is totally, everybody will disagree on that, because I don't really believe this consolidation story that we've been hearing for so much time here in the U.S. I don't really believe it at all. I think we have very, very similar. We're a very small company. We have only 7 dry bulk vessels. But if you look at our OPEX and you look at our earnings on a per ship basis, they're not very different than the other companies. They compete with those. So you can be both a prudent operator and a good charterer of your ships. In today's world, where we are all price takers, I really would challenge, you know, if anybody fixes significantly better than us or has much lower cost than us. So it's not a matter of size. The only thing where size really matters, you know, from a basic small size, because the biggest part of the fleet is controlled by companies that own 1 or 2 or 3 ships, and there, of course, there is economies of scale. But when you reach 10, 15 vessels, that isn't there, simply isn't there. The only advantage that there is for the capital markets is that you can have a Fidelity, you can have an Oaktree, you can have all these big names investing. Do you really need them in a market like this? I believe our companies still quite undervalued, but I think we have a big potential to improve in valuation. And we are relying on much smaller investors, which comprise the universe of this business. And one more thing, do we need all these big companies? Is dry bulk shipping such a big business that we need all these people that will invest billions of dollars? I sincerely doubt that. Thank you.
Yeah, look, I will agree with you in terms of the economies of scale, but I will say very strongly, you want to get to a point where you have the Fidelities of the world investing in these stocks. They are lower cost equity providers. That's what this industry needs. That's what drives valuation. There is no doubt that no matter what size of the public company, that as values move up, the stock price will move up. But you want more than that. You want a premium to everybody else that is sitting here. And the way you do that is get bigger, but it needs to be in a very disciplined way. Mm. Don't believe it's going out and order new buildings. I just think there's a big opportunity to put, whether it's public to public or public to private, companies together now. 6 months from now, as these values move up even more, I'm not so sure if that's going to be the case. But I do think now is a good opportunity.
Yeah. The economies of scale probably aren't there today, but they're coming with regulations, like the tanker business, where there didn't used to be great economies of scale, but there are today because of all the regulations around it. They're coming to dry bulk.
You need a scale to be an operator. You cannot even offer on a cargo contract with 5 or 10 ships. So in minor bulk, where if you're an operator in minor bulk, you definitely need significant scale to create a very efficient and high laden percentage. We have more than 90% of our days at sea fully laden, and that is completely impossible without a huge scale and network of cargoes and ships.
Good. Time is running out. I'll hopefully have time for a few questions. Maybe one very good question, if anyone has any. One question.
Good morning. I'm with Caray Metals. We deal in international trade. One thing hasn't been discussed is why is the freight market going up? What is happening with the economies that is creating this additional value?
Well, we have strong demand growth. We've seen very strong grain demand first out of the U.S. Gulf. Then we got a big volume of Atlantic coal as well that drove demand for the mid-sized ships second half last year. You've also seen a gradual recovery of the oil price, which is counterintuitive, but as has been mentioned here already, that all things equal creates lower speed, which is very positive for the supply-demand balance. It reduces supply, or rather, it allows freight rates to go up without the speeds increasing. And now you have strong South American grain. We're also seeing good demand of construction material. A lot of cement and other construction material is moving into North America and other areas. So that's what's driving demand on the mid-sized and smaller-sized vessels. And supply has come down, still growing. But that's a summary of the demand side.
China is doing great. I mean, it's pulling everything structurally with regard to better quality of that. They want better quality in terms of their environment. They're taking all your EPA people and employing them, and that's going to lead to better imports of high quality iron ore and coal. The housing part is doing fine. The country is acting, the premier is acting as the adult in the room in the world at the moment, and it seems to be moving forward.
Higher commodity prices also helps a lot, right? Contango in commodity prices is very helpful for shipping. It's helpful for stock levels. It's easier to create an arbitrage of moving a cargo if the price is going up forward than the previous period of backwardation.
I think with Xi coming up for re-election for another 5 years soon, he will take all necessary measures to continue to have a good growth in China, which has meant what he has done to continue putting money into infrastructure and all that supports the imports of iron ore and coal. And there is so much iron ore and coal produced in both in Brazil and Australia. Volumes are higher. China will absorb everything that is produced.
And if I may,
I actually have to cut off now because I'm getting some very serious eyes on the right there. But thank you very much for participating.